How do you do? It would be a little unkind to present this picture without just a word of friendly warning. I think it will thrill you. It may shock you. It might even horrify you.
Welcome and happy Halloween to all you marketing witches and warlocks to a spine-tingling special edition of the Marketing Made Clear podcast. In this special haunted episode, we'll be carving out time to look at the history of Halloween through the ages, from Celtic roots to the more contemporary Halloween celebrations of modern times. We'll also be dissecting the ghostly good tactics that make Halloween campaigns so devilishly successful. Hold on to your broomsticks, because things are about to get frightfully fun.
Well, we've warned you.
Marketing Made Clear. We're here to educate. From beginners to pros, we'll elevate. Bringing the insights like a blazing spark. Together we'll conquer in the deep dark.
Welcome to Marketing Made Clear. I'm your host, Will Green, and I'm joined by my drop-dead gorgeous assistant, Marketing Artificial Intelligence Technology, otherwise known as Mate.
Get back to whence you came, spirit.
My aim, as always, is to make marketing clear. Each episode will dive into a specific topic, and today's topic is Halloween. We're throwing the usual format to the wolves, and we'll be following the timeline of the evolution of Halloween, covering the ancient Celtic roots of Samhain, Roman influence and Christianization of Samhain, Halloween in the Middle Ages, the evolution of Halloween in America, Halloween in popular culture, contemporary Halloween celebrations, the psychological and sociological impact of Halloween, and then we'll look at why does Halloween marketing work, and finally a wrap-up. So let's not waste what precious time we have left, and get to the meat and bones of the episode.
Do you know what?
What's that?
I fucking hate you and your puns.
Whoa, that's a bit much, isn't it?
Not really. I'd be surprised if anyone was still listening with your pun-fueled verbal diarrhea pouring out of your mortal mouth.
You're being a bit of a dick today.
You're a dick most days, so makes a change.
Right. Well, that's not very nice, is it? Let's move on, shall we? I get the message. No more puns. No more silly voices. I'll crack on before I'm rudely interrupted again. As I'm sure you already know, Halloween is celebrated on the night of October the 31st. We all know Halloween is a playful, spooky atmosphere marked by costumes, trick-or-treating and festive gatherings. However, beneath its modern-day veneer lies a rich history that spans thousands of years, blending ancient pagan traditions, Christian influences and modern pop culture. So let's have a look at the origins, evolution and cultural significance of Halloween. So before I butcher this, I need to settle on the pronunciation of Samhain. I'm led to believe that Samhain is correct, even though the spelling suggests it should be Samhain. It's spelled S-A-M-H-A-I-N. There are some regional variations on the pronunciation of Samhain within Ireland, so I could still be considered as mispronouncing it. In Ulster, it's pronounced Samhain. In Connaught, it's Samhain. And in Munster, it's Samhain. In Scottish Gaelic, it's pronounced Samhain. So basically, I haven't got a cat's chance in hell of getting this right. Oh, sorry, nearly broke the pun rule there. So yeah, however you say it, the origins of Halloween can be traced back to the ancient Celtic festival of Samhain, which was celebrated over 2,000 years ago in the regions that are now Ireland, the United Kingdom and Northern France.
The Celts, who lived during the Iron Age, followed a calendar divided into two main seasons, the light and the dark. Samhain, meaning summer's end, marked the transition from the harvest season to the onset of winter, a time associated with death and darkness. Samhain was a crucial time for the Celts, as it was believed that the boundary between the living world and the spirit world became blurred. On the night of October the 31st, it was thought that ghosts of the dead could return to Earth, bringing both blessings and mischief. To protect themselves from malevolent spirits, the Celts would light bonfires and wear costumes made from animal skins, a practice that can be seen as an early precursor to modern Halloween customs. That's pretty fucked up by today's standards. Can you imagine turning up to a Halloween party wearing some animal skins? What I do want to know, though, is how did the Celts know it was any specific day 2,000 years ago? I mean, they didn't have calendars.
Let me help you out there, old boy. The Celts did not have the modern Gregorian calendar we use today, so they didn't specifically recognize October 31st as we do now. Instead, they used a lunar calendar and natural cycles to mark time. Samhain was observed at the end of the harvest season and the beginning of winter, typically around the end of October and early November. This timing was based on the seasonal transition and the agricultural calendar rather than a fixed date. The Celts relied heavily on the solar year and key points like the equinoxes and solstices to divide the year into quarters. Samhain was one of their four major seasonal festivals, and it fell roughly halfway between the autumn equinox and the winter solstice.
Equinox? Who's the dick now? Sorry, okay. So what you're saying is more of a around that kind of time thing than an exact date.
Exactly right.
Cool. So the rituals of Samhain included sacrifices of crops and animals to appease the gods. They had practices to predict the future and communal feasting. The Celts also believed in the presence of fairies, known as the Aes Sea. God damn, how do you say that? Aes Sea. It's another weird one. So these fairies could cross into the human world during Samhain. So offerings of food and drink were left out to ensure these supernatural beings were appeased, a practice many think has influenced the modern tradition of leaving treats for visitors. But how do we know all this?
Let me jump in again.
Yeah, cool.
Our knowledge of the Celts, their festivals like Samhain, and their practices comes from a combination of sources, including classical writings from the Greeks and Romans. Julius Caesar, for example, in Commentariae de Bello Gallico, provides some of the earliest written descriptions of the Celts, their religious practices, and their festivals. Medieval Christian sources, from early Irish monks who recorded oral traditions, myths, and stories. Some accounts describe the importance of Samhain in the Celtic calendar, including its association with the otherworld, spirits, and the changing of seasons. Archaeological findings, such as artifacts, burial mounds, and remnants of Celtic settlements, provide physical evidence of their culture and practices. Samhain, in particular, has been preserved in Irish and Scottish folklore, with references to the thinning of the veil between the worlds of the living and the dead. The study of the Celtic languages, for instance, the word Samhain itself comes from the Old Irish word for summer's end, reflecting its role as a seasonal marker. Together, these sources give us a fairly detailed picture of how the Celts lived, worshipped, and celebrated key events like Samhain.
That is very cool. I love that because you always wonder how some of these conclusions have been drawn. Okay, let's leave the Celts behind and move on to our friends the Romans.
All right, but apart from the sanitation, the medicine, education, wine, public order, irrigation, roads, a fresh water system and public health, what have the Romans ever done for us?
If you've ever studied Roman history, you'll know that they are the experts in assimilating culture. It was a massive part of their success. They tried to ease the transition of conquered lands to become fully fledged Romans by merging cultures, festivals and the like. When the Romans conquered Celtic territories around 43 AD, they brought with them their own customs and festivals. Over time, these Roman traditions blended with the existing Celtic practices, leading to an amalgamation of beliefs and rituals. Two Roman festivals, Feralia and Pomona, were particularly influential in shaping the future of Halloween. Feralia was a late October Roman festival honouring the dead, while Pomona the goddess of fruit and trees, was celebrated with offerings of apples and other fruits. The apple in particular became a symbol of fertility and fortune-telling. The tradition of bobbing for apples, which is still popular in Halloween celebrations today, is thought to have originated from these ancient rites. I always thought that bobbing for apples was a bit weird though, so trust the Romans to have come up with that one. Getting back to the timeline though, as Christianity spread across Europe, the church sought to replace pagan festivals with Christian holidays. Just like the Romans, the church at this point was just Catholicism. And that's because the two, or arguably three, great dividing events for the church hadn't happened yet. And I'm sure you know your history and you know all about these, but just to go off on one really quickly, you first had the Great Schism in 1054 AD. This event divided Christianity into two major branches: Roman Catholicism, based in Rome, and Eastern Orthodoxy, based in Constantinople, now Istanbul. The split was due to theological, political, and cultural differences between the Western, Latin-speaking, and Eastern, Greek-speaking parts of the Christian world. And no, as far as I'm aware, the Tulsong Schism has nothing to do with this. But skip forward 500 years to the Protestant Reformation of the 16th century, which was initiated by figures like Martin Luther in 1517. Well, this movement led to the formation of Protestantism. It arose due to disagreements over practices within the Catholic Church, such as the selling of indulgences and theological disputes, particularly regarding salvation and the authority of the Pope. And finally, of course, possibly more specific to the UK, but we have our old mate Henry VIII, who played a significant role in the branching of Christianity, specifically in the creation of Anglicanism, as in the Church of England, which further divided from Roman Catholicism in the 16th century. This is 17 years after Martin Luther's involvement in the Reformation. But in a nutshell, the English Reformation happened in 1534 because Pope Clement VII refused to annul Henry VIII's marriage to Catherine of Aragon. So in a pretty wild response to the Pope's refusal, Henry declared himself the supreme head of the Church of England through the Act of Supremacy in 1534. It's pretty much the biggest fuck you he could have said, and the Church of England went on to adopt various Protestant theological reforms, especially under Henry's successors, most notably under Edward VI. But what's the point of all of this and the relevance to Halloween, I hear you ask?
Yeah boy, you're on a steaming tangent here.
Well, you have to imagine, all these forms of Christianity had already been influenced by this merging of pagan festivals into Christianity. So we start to see them evolve further with their own regional twists. But going back to the 7th century before all these reforms, Pope Boniface IV, I always want to say Boniface. It makes me laugh because it's like a really polite way of saying dickhead. Boniface. Pope Boniface IV established All Saints Day on May the 13th to honour Christian martyrs. However, by the 9th century, under Pope Gregory III, All Saints Day was removed to November the 1st. Nowadays, we see this as an effort to absorb and Christianise the pagan Samhain festival. The night before All Saints Day, which is obviously October the 31st, became known as All Hallows Eve, eventually shortened to Halloween. So Halloween is like the Christmas Eve to All Saints Day, which is basically Samhain following the move. And we've lost the focus on All Saints Day itself, and it's all about the day before for us. It's all about Halloween.
The fixed date of October 31st is therefore a product of later calendar systems and Christian influence rather than something the Celts themselves marked precisely.
Yeah, exactly. It's funny how these things all get mixed up and moved around. But that's not the end of the story, because then we get onto those pesky Middle Ages, which is also the period in which paganism takes a beating from Christianity. So if these time periods are getting a bit confusing, because honestly they are for me, the Middle Ages spans about 1,000 years. You have three main periods. The early Middle Ages, which is the 5th to 10th century, which is often also called the Dark Ages, and that's because of the perceived cultural and economic decline after the fall of Rome in 476 AD. Note the use of the word perceived here. Some of the stuff that happened in the Middle Ages includes the rise of the Byzantine Empire, the spread of Christianity, the formation of early medieval kingdoms and the Viking Age, which is very cool. Well, not if you're British around that time. But then comes the High Middle Ages, 11th to 13th century, which has nothing to do with getting high, I'm afraid. It's more a period of growth after what was seen as a bit of regression for culture and the economy. In this period, you get stuff like the rise of feudalism, which basically means the rise of kings, nobles and knights, while others remain as peasants or serfs. You get the Crusades, the expansion of kingdoms, and increased trade and cultural exchange. This is also the height of medieval chivalry and the influence of the Catholic Church. This is just before some of the events we've already mentioned, like the Reformation. Finally, you get the late Middle Ages, which are the 14th to 15th century. It's a pretty turbulent time, now seen as a period of transition. But this period is marked by events like the Black Death, the Hundred Years' War, and growing social and economic challenges. This era saw the decline of feudalism and the beginning of the Renaissance, leading to the transition into the modern era. Also, like I said earlier, paganism takes a beating from Christianity. Whereas the Romans, who before converting to Catholicism were themselves pagan, had been relatively open and adoptive, other powers that be saw paganism as a threat and sought more to stamp it out or suppress it. Eventually, paganism is outlawed in most Christian regions, and Christianity spreads through Europe like wildfire. So you get this double-edged sword. Less regions that aren't Christian and less acceptance for non-Christian religions. We even see Christianity reach Scandinavia and the Baltics. So I've summarised the 1,000 years in a couple of minutes there, but can you imagine how turbulent things must have been? It's no wonder there was so much merging of pagan and Christian traditions. So for pagan traditions, it was basically a roll of the dice. Get absorbed by Christianity and get rolled out to all these new lands, or get suppressed. And getting back to the topic of the day, during the Middle Ages, Halloween began to take on the characteristics of both its pagan and Christian roots. So the spread of Christianity actually rolled All Hallows Eve out to a greater and greater number. The festival became a time for people to remember the dead, pray for souls in purgatory, and celebrate the changing of the seasons. Pagan customs, such as wearing costumes to ward off spirits, continue to be practiced, now under a Christian guise.
But how did the focus move to the day before?
Well, I'm getting to that. So All Hallows Eve, the night before All Saints Day, became a significant observance in medieval Europe. People would light candles and lanterns to guide souls on their journey to the afterlife and protect against evil spirits. This practice evolved into the tradition of carving lanterns out of vegetables, like turnips, which were later replaced by pumpkins in America. I feel like I should have known pumpkins were from America, but these days we don't even really think about where our foods come from, do we? It comes from the supermarket or greengrocer.
May I?
Yeah, go ahead.
Pumpkins originate from North America, specifically from the region that is now the southern United States and northern Mexico. They are one of the oldest domesticated crops, with evidence of pumpkin seeds being found in Mexico dating back over 7,000 years.
That's pretty cool to know and actually relevant. Thanks, mate.
No problemo.
Medieval Halloween was also a time of superstition and magic. Like I said earlier, it was believed that the veil between worlds was thin, making it an ideal time for divination and fortune telling. People would engage in various rituals to predict their future, especially concerning marriage and death. These practices, often rooted in ancient folklore, added to the mystical atmosphere of the holiday. Right, so we're getting to a time in history of mass migration, particularly out to America. And this, as is becoming a theme for today's podcast, results in further cultural integration. So yeah, Halloween was basically brought to America by European immigrants, particularly the Irish, who fled the Great Famine in the mid-19th century. With them came the traditions of Samhain, which had somehow survived all that Christian oppression. But then obviously we have the strongly cemented All Hallows Eve traditions of Christianity. And these began to blend with other cultural practices in the melting pot that is America. The holiday started to evolve into a community-centred event, focusing more on gatherings, food and games. Now, as we get into the era of mass production, commercialisation and, of course, the huge cultural changes that come with it, the focus becomes less on religion and more on the commercial opportunity of Halloween. Companies started producing costumes, decorations and candles specifically for Halloween, turning it into a major consumer holiday. This shift was driven by the growing popularity of Halloween parties, parades, and community events.
What about trick or treating? You haven't mentioned that yet.
Yeah, okay, good point. Trick or treating, now a quintessential Halloween activity, mainly in America, has roots in several traditions, including the medieval practice of souling. Souling, not soiling, is where the poor would go door to door asking for food in exchange for prayers of the dead. It dates back to the 10th century and was associated with All Saints' Day again. Back in the day, souling would usually be in exchange for soul cakes, which were small, round, kind of sweet loaves. Nowadays, souling has morphed into trick-or-treating, and the treat has changed from a soul cake to sweets, or for my American listeners, candy. By the 1920s and 1930s, trick-or-treating began to take its modern form in America, encouraged by communities as a way to control Halloween pranks and promote safe, family-friendly fun. So that kind of takes us up to the now, and we've seen the origins of Halloween. We talked a little bit about pumpkins, or jack-o'-lanterns, a little bit about costumes and trick-or-treating, and then obviously ghosts, skeletons or spirits basically link to the dead. But then in the modern era, popular culture plays such a huge part that Halloween has been a source of inspiration for writers, particularly those in the gothic and horror genres. Classic works such as Mary Shelley's Frankenstein and Bram Stoker's Dracula are often associated with Halloween due to their dark themes. Edgar Allan Poe's macabre stories also contribute to the holiday's eerie atmosphere. Halloween's influence on film and television is profound, with the holiday serving as a backdrop for numerous horror films and specials. The 1978 film Halloween, directed by John Carpenter, became a cultural phenomenon and established many of the motifs associated with slasher films. Halloween-themed episodes of TV shows became a staple, offering a mix of horror and humour. And I always think about The Simpsons, who are well known for their Halloween episodes. Music and fashion have also played a role in shaping Halloween's cultural significance. Songs like Michael Jackson's Thriller and Bobby Boris Pickett's Monster Mash have become Halloween anthems. Meanwhile, the holiday's emphasis on costumes has made it a showcase for creativity and self-expression. Fashion trends often take cues from popular culture, with costumes inspired by movies, TV shows, and celebrities. So really, Halloween has become a genre, and other things we haven't mentioned just become part of the spectacle, like witches, black cats, bats, spiders, and haunted houses. These all have their own cultural origins, but they've been rolled up into the Halloween umbrella. At this point, I absolutely have to mention a favourite couple of spooky films of mine, and that is the Addams Family films of the 1990s. The Addams Family, 1991, and Addams Family Values in 1993. Probably seem really cheesy now, but to me, these are iconic for their dark humour, impeccable casting, and that kind of whimsical portrayal of the macabre family life. There's something about the way they enjoy the darkness. I love it. That's probably why I'm such a goth. But these films brilliantly balance the gothic aesthetic with biting social commentary, making them both eerie and charmingly humorous. Raul Julia is so good as Gomez. That is Gomez to me, and I'm afraid that I don't think anyone will ever replicate that. Angelica Houston was born to play Morticia, and their chemistry together was so utterly believable and really elevated the films. Christina Ricci's portrayal of Wednesday Addams became so legendary for its deadpan wit. Pugsley, Lurch, and all the other characters were amazing too, but those three were the standouts. For me, the film blended elements of the original Charles Addams cartoons with modern humour, making them timeless for generations of fans. So really, just for no other reason than I can, in dedication to these films, here are five facts that you might not know about the films.
Oh, Wednesday's at that very special age when a girl has only one thing on her mind. Boys.
Homicide.
Number one, Raul Julia's dedication. Raul Julia, who played Gomez Addams, was battling stomach cancer during the filming of Addams Family Values, the second of the films. Despite his illness, he delivered such a powerful performance, and what a legacy he's left behind. Number two, Angelica Houston's makeup process. To achieve Morticia's iconic look, Angelica Houston had to endure hours of makeup, including the use of painful adhesive tapes to pull her eyes upwards for a more ethereal appearance. Number 3. Christopher Lloyd as Uncle Fester. Christopher Lloyd, known for his role as Doc Brown in Back to the Future, was initially hesitant to take on the role of Uncle Fester, but eventually embraced the eccentric character. I didn't know this, but Christopher Lloyd is actually 1.85 metres tall, which is 6'1", and Fester is not meant to be a tall character, so he had to bend his neck forward in order to appear shorter, which is why he has that kind of hunchback in it. And I love how he says, "Gomez!" Number 4. Christina Ricci's influence on the script. Christina Ricci's portrayal of Wednesday was so impactful in the first film that the writers expanded her role significantly in the Addams Family Values film, even incorporating ideas Ricci brought to the character. And finally, number 5. The Addams Family marked Barry Sonnenfeld's directorial debut. He was previously known as a cinematographer for films like When Harry Met Sally and Misery. What a film that is, by the way. But The Addams Family was his transition back into directing, which led to his later success with films like Men in Black.
And we're all here to learn, to grow, and to just plain have fun!
Because that's what being privileged is all about!
Right, back to Halloween. So, as Halloween has gained popularity worldwide, it's adapted to fit various cultural contexts. Countries like Mexico, where Dia de los Muertos, the Day of the Dead, is celebrated around the same time of year, which integrated Halloween into the Aztec rituals, often blending themes of death and remembrance. And then in Ireland and Scotland, some Samhain customs continue. Bonfires are still lit, and children still go guising, which is similar to trick-or-treating, where they perform a song, poem, or a trick for a treat. In Asian countries, Halloween is celebrated with unique twists that reflect local customs, like in Japan, where there is a particularly large Halloween parade in Kawasaki. Participants showcase elaborate and creative costumes, reflecting Japan's love for cosplay and festivals. And then in Chinese culture, Tenxi, the Hungry Ghost Festival, is held on the 15th day of the 17th lunar month, honouring ancestors with food offerings, lanterns and rituals. Though not linked directly to Halloween, it shares similarities in honouring the deceased. In the Philippines, bear with me here, Pangangalawa. Yeah, what mate said, is celebrated, which is the traditional Filipino practice on All Saints Day, where groups go door to door singing for alms and prayers for the souls in purgatory. More recently, it's seen a revival as a cultural tradition distinct from Western Halloween. Then also more recently, the use of technology has also transformed how people celebrate, with social media influencing costume trends. Halloween taps into humanity's fascination with fear and the supernatural. The thrill of horror movies, haunted attractions, and ghost stories provides a safe space for people to explore their fears. Apparently, we love the adrenaline of being scared, but we still need that safety. A few years back, I went to the Walking Dead themed night at Thorpe Park, a theme park local to us, and they had people dressed up and chasing around the park all over the place. And this psychological aspect of Halloween can be cathartic, allowing individuals to confront anxieties in a controlled environment. Halloween also fosters social bonding as communities come together for celebrations and events. Whether through trick-or-treating, costume parties or neighbourhood decorations, Halloween encourages interaction and connection among individuals. This communal aspect strengthens social ties and creates shared experiences. And as marketers, we can't help but get drawn to the theme of Halloween. Halloween has become a significant economic driver, with billions generated in revenue annually. Retailers benefit from the sale of costumes, candy, decorations and themed merchandise. The holiday's commercial success is not limited to stores. Entertainment industries such as haunted house, theme parks and movie theatres also see a substantial increase in their business during the Halloween season. This economic impact highlights the holiday's transformation from a primarily spiritual and agricultural festival to a major consumer event. You can piggyback almost anything onto Halloween, but if you're a marketer and you're thinking of running a Halloween-themed marketing campaign, here are some things to think about and hopefully help you hone in on. I've come up with seven, I don't know why it's seven, but that's how many I came up with, seven themes you could tap into to make your Halloween marketing awesome. So number one, seasonal excitement and nostalgia. Halloween evokes a sense of nostalgia and fun for many people. Consumers are emotionally primed to engage with brands that embrace the spooky season because it reminds them of fun childhood memories and traditions. By tapping into that excitement, brands can create emotional connections that lead to stronger engagement and loyalty. Number two is creativity and playfulness. The playful nature of Halloween allows brands to stretch their creativity with fun, spooky, and even outlandish themes. This offers a great opportunity for memorable marketing campaigns that stand out in a crowded marketplace. From eerie imagery to pun-filled taglines, Halloween provides a unique canvas for creativity that other holidays may not offer. Number three, seasonal products and limited time offers. Consumers love limited time offers, and Halloween gives brands a perfect opportunity to release themed products or special editions. Whether it's a pumpkin spiced latte or anything else, Halloween themed packaging, or exclusive spooky merchandise, the get it before it's gone mentality encourages impulse buying and creates urgency. Number four, user generated content. Halloween is one of the most visual and participatory holidays, with costumes, decorations, and themed parties dominating the social media feeds. This gives brands the chance to encourage user-generated content, from costume contests to the haunted house photo challenges. Consumers love showing off their spooky style, and this leads to organic promotion and engagement. Number five, tapping into fear. Halloween is all about fear, but in a fun way. By playing on themes of mystery and suspense, brands can draw consumers in with marketing that teases special tricks and treats that won't be around for too long. The limited time aspect of Halloween can create an urgency to act now, driving conversions. Number six, targeting multiple demographics. Halloween's appeal stretches across generations, from kids trick-or-treating to adults attending costume parties. This gives brands a broad audience to market to, whether it's kid-friendly promotions or horror-themed campaigns for thrill-seekers, or even nostalgic throwbacks for millennials and Gen Xers. Number seven, social media amplification. The visual and festive nature of Halloween is perfect for social media marketing. From Instagram-worthy costume pictures to Pinterest boards filled with DIY decor ideas, Halloween gives plenty of opportunities to interact with consumers in a highly shareable way. It's a holiday where creativity thrives and content can go viral more easily. So by leveraging all these elements, brands can create a Halloween marketing campaign that captures attention, sparks joy, and drives sales in a way that's as thrilling as a haunted house. It's possible that looping in the historical elements of Halloween is probably going to fall on deaf ears these days, as a cultural Halloween is something completely different from the religious roots. But I just find the origins so fascinating. I do want to shout out one marketing campaign that has done really well and is used as an example as one of the most successful Halloween marketing campaigns of all time. And that is Burger King's Scary Clown Night campaign from 2017. This clever and viral campaign directly targeted McDonald's by tapping into the cultural fear of clowns, a totem that was reinforced by the release of the horror movie It around the same time. It's very clever, and it continues on the theme of why eat like a clown when you can eat like a king campaign. The basic concept was that Burger King offered free Whoppers to anyone that came into their restaurant dressed as a clown on Halloween night. Clearly a playful jab at McDonald's mascot, Ronald McDonald, a well-known clown figure. The campaign was promoted with a creepy video featuring a young man being chased by scary clowns, reminiscent of horror movies. It ended with the tagline, "Come as a clown, eat like a king." Genius. The campaign garnered massive media attention and social media buzz, leveraging the Halloween theme while also poking fun at its biggest competitor. The integration of a viral costume incentive boosted participation and in-store traffic, making it a memorable and effective Halloween campaign. Scary Clown Night worked because it hit on the cultural movement, which was the resurgence of scary clowns in popular media. It directly engaged customers that created a fun, viral experience that positioned Burger King as playful and bold in its brand rivalry of McDonald's. And that one campaign ticks all seven boxes that I introduced earlier.
One!
Seasonal excitement and nostalgia.
Two!
Creativity and playfulness.
Three!
Seasonal products and limited time offers.
Okay, maybe not a seasonal product, but definitely a limited time offer.
Four!
User generated content.
Five!
Tapping into fear.
Six!
Targeting multiple demographics.
Yes! Seven!
Social media amplification.
So if you're putting a campaign together, hopefully that's food for thought. I think it's about time to bring this to some sort of conclusion, don't you think, mate?
Yep, take it away, Wilberforce.
Okay, cool. So let me try and summarise this. The history of Halloween illustrates the fascinating journey from ancient Celtic rituals to a modern, globally recognised celebration. The holiday has continuously evolved, absorbing elements from different cultures and adapting to societal changes. Its ability to blend the sacred and the secular, the ancient and the contemporary, makes Halloween a unique reflection of cultural evolution. Looking ahead, Halloween will likely adapt to the changing cultural and social landscape. As debates about cultural sensitivity and appropriation become more prominent, Halloween may shift towards more respectful, inclusive practices. Moreover, the integration of technology will keep transforming how people experience and celebrate Halloween, potentially leading to new traditions and ways of connecting. Despite these changes, Halloween's core themes will likely endure, keeping the spirit of the holiday alive for generations to come. Halloween in many ways serves as a mirror reflecting society's values, fears and desires. It provides a safe space for people to confront the unknown, play with identity and indulge in the thrill of the macabre, all within a framework of fun and community. As cultures continue to blend and change, Halloween will remain a vibrant, living tradition, offering insights into our shared human experience. Through the lens of Halloween, we can better understand the ever-shifting landscape of cultural identity and expression, and how our past continues to shape our present and future. Okay, well that's it. Thanks for joining me. I hope this has got you in the mood for Halloween, or to plan a banger of a Halloween marketing campaign. In the next episode, we'll be looking into Guy Fawkes Night. I'm really looking forward to that, and if you like this episode, I'm sure you like that one too. To support the podcast, please do subscribe and check out my website, marketingmadeclear.com. If you'd like to suggest topics, correct anything I messed up, or just drop me a line, email will@marketingmadeclear.com. Please follow Marketing Made Clear on Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram. Thanks for all your support.
And keep it spooky.
Take it away. Formation of the 16th century, which was initiated by figures like Martin Luther in 1517, well, this movement led to the formation of Protestantism. This movement led to the formation of the Protestantism. This movement led to the formation of the Protestantism. This movement led to the formation of Protestantism. It arose due to disagreements over practices within the Catholic Church, such as the selling of indulgences.
Haunt you.